This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. In 1884, the world's first roller coaster, the Gravity Pleasure Switchback Railway, flew down the tracks on Coney Island in Brooklyn. If you can believe it, it stood a monstrous 45 feet high, and its cars raced along at 6 miles an hour. Needless to say, a lot has changed since that first plunge. Today's coasters are imposing spiderwebs of steel, tall, fast, and lithe. These architectural triumphs test our courage and our stomachs. Scary, but, well, that's the point, at least for the thrill-seekers among us. Today on Talk of the Nation, we'll get tips from a roller coaster connoisseur about the best rides, hear from a designer about G-force and airtime, and go along for a ride on the Millennium Force. Later in the program, we'll bring you an update from the Democratic Convention in Boston, and we'll ask why the price of crude oil hit a record high today. But first, roller coasters. Have you tried one of these new monsters? How did it feel before, during, and after? And what do you look for in a coaster? Call us with your roller coaster memories, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Later in the program, we're going to be taking a ride with an intrepid reporter from member station WKSU. If you're near your computer, you can ride along on the internet. Go to npr.org, click on the video link, and get ready to hit play when we tell you to. Joining us now from Cake Mix Studios in Dallas, Texas, is Tim Baldwin. He writes for Amusement Today. He also hands out the golden tickets. Those are rewards for the best roller coasters around the world. Tim, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be with you.
What makes a ride thrilling? Is it just heightened speed?
I think everyone has their own personal tastes when it comes to a coaster. I think the avid enthusiast likes that moment of negative gravity, the negative Gs, which we refer to as airtime, where your body is lifted up off the seat momentarily. It's really the true thrill that I think drives most of the enthusiasts around the country.
Mm-hmm. If I'm not mistaken, there are basically two different kinds of roller coaster riders, the slightly reluctant and then the rabid enthusiasts. What do you think makes them different?
That's a good question. I think, psychologists would probably really psychoanalyze everything to where there's something going on inside your brain. But I think a lot of people just have a fear of heights or don't have a fear of heights, or they just have done it since they were a kid and they know it's really, really fun. And then there are some people that have always found it intimidating or just slightly standing to the side saying, no, I'll pass out this time, and they don't ever take the plunge. But I think once people get on, they really like it.
Tell us a little bit about the different, I'm not sure what the word is, genres of roller coasters. Is that right?
Well, typically, especially among avid aficionados, they're going to divide their coaster favorites into lists of wood and steel. And you mentioned previously how it all got started back in 1884, and you're going to find people really have a nostalgic love for the wooden coaster. It just, it has a broad mass appeal to everyone because they're very open, they're very free. They have that indescribable clinkety sound going up the lift hill, the rustle of the wooden rails, and everyone just really loves that. And steel came along in the middle of the last century, and they could really do a lot of things technologically with that. And they started looping and twisting, and with that, they did some very amazing maneuvers. But at the same time, you kind of isolate your audience to someone who's willing to let their body be whipped and looped and whirled and everything. And a lot of people love it, but, there's still something to be said deep in the heart of any enthusiast about good old-fashioned wooden roller coasters.
Is there a separate genre called the hyper coaster?
We start to term things so people know what we're talking about. The term hypercoaster was actually coined by a group called the American Coaster Enthusiasts when a park in Sandusky, Ohio called Cedar Point introduced the Magnum XL 200 back in 1989. And it was the first roller coaster to top 200 feet. So, they had been using the term mega coaster as they started getting over 100 feet. And so someone said, we need to come up with a new term. So they called it Hypercoaster, and it happened to be the editor of the publication of Roller Coaster Magazine, which is published by the American Coaster Enthusiast. Yeah. And so anytime you hear hyper coaster, you know you're going over 200 feet tall.
Is there a giga coaster coming?
Well, actually, there is. I think Cedar Point, when they introduced the Millennium Force coaster you were referring to, I don't know if it was the park or the manufacturer, when they topped 300 feet, they called it a giga coaster. And now that there's a 400-foot-plus coaster out there, a phrase I've heard is stratacoaster on that. So who knows? There's never an end to vocabulary when it comes to roller coasters, that's for sure.
Well, the design and construction of roller coasters requires a combination of manpower and brain power. Here to illuminate the process for us is Sandor Kernax. He's president of Intamin Limited, a firm which designs rides for amusement parks. And he's with us on the phone from his office in Glen Burnie, Maryland. Good of you to be with us today.
I'm very glad to be with you, and I think it's a very exciting time when we can talk about the new generation of coasters. And while there is a lot of excitement with the favorite wood coasters, on the other hand, the steel coasters opened new avenues as far as height and speed is concerned. And the most important thing with steel coasters, that the steel could be fabricated far more accurately than the wood. For that reason, the ride will be much, much smoother. And if the ride is smoother, then basically we can safely have the passengers riding steel coasters at higher speed and higher height. And that was, I believe, was accomplished on the Giga Coaster at Cedar Point, which was the first coaster in the world which exceeded the 300 feet height.
How long does it take, on average, from concept to completion to create one of these modern giants you're talking about?
Well, actually, it took less than 2 years.
Less than 2 years?
Yes.
And is this a computer-aided design now as well?
Yes, it's a completely computer-aided design. You know, in the past, the calculations were done manually. Now they are done with various computer models and several of them, and typically on a giga coaster, if you would take all the calculations together, you would be probably could see around 70 or 80,000 pages of calculations.
You then, that's just the design. Do you also run into problems in manufacture?
Well, the manufacturing the high volume of steel.
What's that sound we're hearing? Hello?
Hello,
Mr. Kernax, are you still there?
Yes, I lost you for a second.
Oh, that's all right. Go ahead.
Yes, basically the issue is that steel coasters are built with such a big height, it's really important to fabricate very accurately and with very high standards, and also involves a large amount of steel. And Cedar Point is an unusual place because everything to be designed for a wind load of 90 miles per hour because of the vicinity of Lake Erie.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, of course, we want your input on all of these questions. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. If you haven't called us before, take the plunge. And let's go with Kathy, who's with us on the line from Pueblo, Colorado.
Hi. I hope I don't break out. I'm kind of in a bad zone here. When I was about 8 or 9 years old, we were in Denver at Elitch's, which was a famous amusement park in Elitch's, in Denver, on the Twister, which was a quite famous wooden roller coaster. I wanted to do it more than anything else, and my aunt convinced me that I needed to go on the smaller metal roller coaster. I went on that, and I was scared out of my pants. And never wanted to do another one. When I was 40 years old, I went to San Diego, got drunk, got on the run on the beach, and conquered that fear. And then the last night that the original Elitch's amusement park was open in Denver, I went and rode the Twister. And I was probably about 45 years old or so. And I watched him build the new one at the new amusement park. I'm fascinated by him, but I don't ever want to get on it again.
Well, Tim Baldwin, is Kathy's experience unique?
No, actually, it's a very common one, I assume, and I congratulate you for getting on that coaster on the last day. What's ironic is I was at the park the same day you were, because I was at Elitch Gardens on its very closing day when the original park closed down. What a loss that original coaster was, because it was a great one. It really was phenomenal.
And I believe that it looks to me like they're letting the Twister 2, which they rebuilt, fall apart at the new, what's now owned by Six Flags. But they have so many of the new metal coasters that when I drove by it last week, it looks like it's literally falling apart. And I know my children, they are getting on the wooden one. They want the big ones.
Oh, there's always that marketing draw to the bigger and the faster. I did ride the Twister 2 last year, and I can tell you it's not falling apart. It's still very enjoyable. I have a personal preference for the original design, but I know every park that owns a wooden coaster has to walk the track every day, check all the bolts and everything. So that's a matter of just daily operational routine, so you don't have to fear about that.
Well, I don't plan to ever get on it again.
Oh, give it a whirl. You need to talk yourself into it. It's really a great form of therapy. I mean, what would be more fun to let everything out, to sit on a boring old couch with a psychologist, or to drop, 80 feet to the ground with your hands in the air screaming at the top of your lungs? It's good for you.
Well, maybe I should, because I am fascinated by it. I can't drive by it without looking at it. So,
well, there you go. They are fascinating machines, and they're definitely a lot cheaper than psychiatrists, too.
That's true. Kathy, thanks very much, and good luck.
Bye-bye.
Sandor Kernax, how much, if you're reconstructing something like the Twister 2 or some of these big metal ones that you're designing now, this has got to cost a lot of money, doesn't it?
Yes, it costs a lot of money because a lot of new technology goes into that cable lift. For example, we are on the Giga Coaster. We are going to the top with a speed of 20 feet per second, and basically we would get to the top of that 300-foot tall lift in 20 seconds, which probably would be a time for a much, much smaller coaster to get to the point.
In addition to designing and manufacturing these roller coasters, do you ride them as well?
Hello?
Mr. Kernax?
Yes.
I was asking, in addition to designing these roller coasters, do you ride them as well?
Oh, I ride them all. I always want the first one to ride. When we open a new ride, I always ride it several times, front and the rear and the middle, because we make instrument testing and we do dummy testing. But, sometimes your feelings and your hearings and your experience could add a lot of valuable details.
And you're obviously you're looking for different answers than the ordinary thrill seeker.
Yes, basically I am listening to the sound of the coaster. I am listening to the smoothness of the coaster, and keeping in mind that a lot of people will be riding that, and we have to make sure that is absolutely safe.
Are any of the ones, of all the ones you've built, is any one particular your favorite?
Well, I would say that always the last one is the most favorite, because that's where your mind is. And every time when you build something, you try to build a better one and a different one. And sometimes you are successful, sometimes not. But most of the time, we feel that we always make a progress going ahead.
We're talking about roller coasters. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll take more of your calls. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. You can also send us email. The address is totn@npr.org. We're speaking with Tim Baldwin, a writer for Amusement Today, and with Sandor Kernax, who's president of Intamin, a firm which designs rides for amusement parks. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about roller coasters today. Our guests are Tim Baldwin of Amusement Today and Sandor Kernax, president of Intamin Limited, which designs rides for amusement parks. If you'd like to join our conversation, our phone number is 800-989-8255. Tell us why you love or hate roller coasters. You can also email us, totn@npr.org. And let's get another caller on the line. Andres joins us from Oxford, Ohio.
Hi, thanks for taking me a call. Coney Island Cyclone is probably one of my favorite roller coasters. I rode it 7 times when I was there last time, and then I ran out of money. It has, in my opinion, a really good mix of turns and airtime, and the hills are pretty steep. It's really nice.
Tim Baldwin, the Cyclone, I guess, is one of the classics.
It's absolutely a classic. It's received a landmark status, I believe, by the City of New York, and also the American Coaster Enthusiasts have designated it as a coaster classic landmark. It's, in fact, such a great ride. It's been duplicated several times. There's a duplicate, to a certain degree, in Texas at Astroworld, the Texas Cyclone. There's the Georgia Cyclone at Six Flags Over Texas. There's a copy at Magic Mountain in California, a loosely based copy in Chicago, and even one in Japan called White Cyclone, I believe.
Well, we're about to go for a ride on another cyclone. Andres, thanks very much for the call.
No problem. Thanks.
If we don't ride one, what's the point? As we promised you earlier in the program, we're going to take a ride. You can go along. Go to npr.org if you haven't done so. Click on the video of the Millennium Force roller coaster at Cedar Point Amusement Park in Sandusky, Ohio. Kevin Niedermeyer, a reporter for member station WKSU in Kent, Ohio, is on the roller coasters platform right now. He's going to ride it with us. When it starts moving, he'll tell you to click the play button. Hi, Kevin. Getting ready?
We're getting ready. It's going to be a few moments.
And this is a huge roller coaster.
It really is. 310 feet at the top, 90-some miles an hour off the first hill at 45 degrees. It's a very spindly-looking thing, but I guess it should be safe.
Okay. Well, are you strapped in yet?
Yeah, we're strapped in. It's going to be a few moments here. It's going to start going up to the top.
You nervous?
Not really. I think probably the angry stares from the people behind me who waited for about an hour in line. I escorted to the front of the line, so that might be a little more scary than the ride itself, and that's why I'm some cotton candy to appease them. But it's not a scary thing for me, right, particularly. Maybe a malfunction would be more, you know, is something that worries me more than the ride itself.
Have you been to Cedar Point recently?
The last time I was here was in the late 90s, and the big kid on the block then was the Magnum, which was a paltry about 205 feet. So this is about 100 feet higher and about 20 miles an hour faster.
I'm hearing some announcements.
Okay, we're getting ready to go here.
All right, make sure to tell us go.
Okay, we're heading up the hill now.
And the
310 feet at the top. It takes off. It climbs a lot faster than you remember the older coasters climbing. Good view over Lake Erie. Probably once you get to the top, you can just about see Canada.
Don't push go quite yet.
All right, to the top. Okay, here we are. We're at the top.
So go.
Here we go. 45 degrees, almost straight down.
I'm losing my stomach just listening to this. Hey. Commander Kernax, describe what Kevin is going through for us. Can you describe for us what Kevin is going through?
Well, basically, he went up on a 45-degree lift with a high speed. It took around 20 seconds, and he was comparing it to the Magnum. Magnum takes more time to get to 200 feet, and after that, he went into almost 90-degree drop, and he accelerated to 95 miles per hour at the bottom.
95 miles an hour?
Yes, and after that, he was going in a high overbank turn, and making big sweeping turns, first to the left and to the right, or the first to the right and then to the left, going over a huge hump with very nice airtime. And again, he went over to an island at Cedar Point to the other part of the park, which is a really very, very nice area close to the Dragster ride, where basically, again, nice airtime, overbank curve, coming back with a high speed overbank, mm-hmm. low curve, and then again about 100 foot or 120 foot tall hump with nice airtime, and then he was hitting with the tunnel with a big sweeping left turn, and again airtime with bunny humps going to the end when he would make a big overbank turn with right. To the right, and hitting the magnetic braking system around 57 or 58 miles per hour.
That's a very dispassionate discussion of a ride that Kevin, well, we could hear you screaming, Kevin. What was it like?
Well, it's incredible. You know, the first hill you drop off, you don't see the bottom. 45 degrees, you're hitting over 90 miles an hour from, you know, 310 feet. So you come off a little shaky.
And did you enjoy it? Was it fun?
Oh, yeah, it's great. I love these things. this is the best one I've been on. Like I say, the last time I was here, the Magnum was the big coaster. It's, you know, 200 feet and 70-some miles an hour, so this is just, you know, that much better.
Well, if what are you going to do with the rest of your day, Kevin, now that you're done doing this?
Oh, actually, the tallest coaster here is the Top Fuel Dragster, which goes 120 miles an hour in about 4 seconds and climbs to over 400 feet, so I might give that a shot.
Kevin Niedermeyer, a reporter for member station WKSU in Kent, Ohio. If you've ever thought about, whether you should go into the reporting business or not, some days you get paid to go ride roller coasters. Thanks very much, Kevin.
Thank you.
Kevin joined us from Cedar Point Amusement Park in Sandusky, Ohio. Actually, Sandor, we have an email question for you. Our 12-year-old son, Ken and Mary Jones Wright, is passionate about designing roller coasters and seriously intends to do this for a living. He wants to know what he should study in school and what tips you might have for him.
Well, basically, depending on what part he wants to design of a roller coaster, because every roller coaster starts out with a conceptual design, which would require creativeness and also technical knowledge, what is feasible and what is not. And then there will be the specific designers who would design the track dynamics. That means how the whole roller coaster would run. There are designers for the structure, for the lift, for the electrical control system, the launch, basically the lift drive system, and also for the magnetic brake system, which is a very unusual thing that with the traditional brakes you could never hit with cars regularly. Mm-hmm. Brake sections with 57 or 58 miles.
So it sounds like he might want to go to engineering school.
Well, yes.
Okay. Thanks for that. I did want to ask Tim Baldwin, how does that roller coaster stack up? I know you do a lot of reviews.
It's extremely popular. In fact, when we gave out the Golden Ticket Awards, Millennium Force was at the top 3 years ago and 2 years ago of our Golden Ticket Awards list, and it got slightly dethroned last year in the 2003 awards, and we're going to announce the 2004 Golden Ticket Awards on August 27th, actually being hosted by Cedar Point. They asked us to come last year, and we do the ceremony kind of like the Oscars of roller coasters, and that'll be on August 27th. So anyone who wants to see how Millennium Force stacks up in 2004 can just go to amusementtoday.com on August 27th and find out this year's results. But I can tell you that's That's an extremely popular ride, and that reporter kept saying that he was going down 45 degrees, and that was wrong. He was going up 45 degrees. His drop was well over 80 degrees steep, and I don't know if he mentioned it, right to the left of that lift hill was Lake Erie. There's Sandusky Bay right there on Lake Erie, and it's an amazing view. You're either looking at water or sky, and then suddenly the whole world just turns 180 degrees and you're staring straight down. It's a very neat experience, and he said it was very smooth. It's very enjoyable.
And apparently outracing the cell phone signals along the way. by the way, apparently a lot of people tried to click in and ride along with us, so many that a few may not have been able to get in with us. We apologize for that. Let's get another caller on the line. Aaron is with us from Rockford, Michigan.
Hello.
Hello.
I had a question. I grew up in Northern Virginia, and at King's Dominion there was a coaster that was removed, and the rumor was that it had been taken out because someone had fallen out of it because their harness wasn't fastened properly, and this is probably in the mid-80s. I'm just curious, and I know parks are kind of reticent to release safety records, but I'm wondering, you know, everybody's got a legendary story about, you know, a carnival ride that went wrong, or a coaster that, you know, like the one that we had that was removed because of something that was rumored to have been a fatality.
I knew a guy who wrote a book about a killer coaster, but he made his up. But Tim Baldwin?
Sure, I can comment to that. First off, let me tell you that going to an amusement park is pretty much about the safest recreation that you can do. Statistically, 99.99% of people enjoy the ride experiences without any incident whatsoever, compared to any other recreational sports, including fishing, basketball, swimming. Amusement park rides are incredibly safe. I'm really familiar with King's Dominion. I don't remember any incident. In fact, they have all the coasters they opened with, except I think they had a very small kind of carnival one that I'm sure they just upgraded to a larger coaster in its place, and that one was probably just bought by someone else, like a carnival, and just operating elsewhere. And, you know, you're right, there are urban legends. Everyone's always heard things, and typically they have no factual basis. It's just something they heard someone else talk about in line, and it just kept spreading. But it's an extremely safe industry. Their entire lifeblood depends on it.
Sandor Kernax, let me ask you, obviously, safety must be an important factor in design.
Well, it's a very important factor because people are going to the park to have a good time, and if they get injured, then they wouldn't go there. And if you look at, for example, the Millennium Force, it opened 2000, and I believe by the end of this year, almost 10 million people had ridden that ride without any incidents or any problems. And basically, I believe that there are many areas in the world, even with our daily traffic and everything else, we would like to feel as safe as those passengers can feel who are riding those coasters.
Aaron, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
We're talking about roller coasters. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And here's another Aaron who joins us from Columbia, South Carolina.
Hi there.
Hi.
I have a question regarding seating positions. I recently was able to go to Paramount Carowinds, and they just got a new Superman-type ride where you you sit down and then you recline back, and you end up being really in all different positions, laying down, facing up. And I was wondering if there are any newer new seating developments as far as positions and things of that nature.
Sandor Kernax?
I don't know what you mean by new seating arrangements.
Like, are your feet dangling or standing up or sitting down? Any new ideas as far as how you're actually sitting or standing?
Well, actually, the most successful coasters are usually sitting down because that is the position people feel more comfortably. Also, the suspended coasters are very popular. And there was a time, I would say probably a 3 or 4 year period, when the stand-up coasters were also popular, but it looks like that the public or the majority of the people who go to the park prefer to see rides where they sit down, whether it's suspended or the vehicle is under them. And the design is always driven by the marketing research what the people want to see and ride when they go to the park.
Aaron, okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
Neil, go ahead.
Can I comment to that?
Okay. Go ahead, Tim.
Aaron, this is Tim here. Yeah, the flying coaster that you refer to, which is actually called Borg Assimilator at Paramount Carowinds, is only one of six that let people ride in a flying position. You've got one fairly close to you also at Six Flags Over Georgia called Superman Ultimate Flight. But there are only six of those in the world. It's a pretty rare experience. But, you know, there's only so many ways your body can be. They have built stand-up roller coasters. There's a dozen or so of those. They're the ones where you're hanging below the track where you swing. There are ones where you're hanging below the track and your feet dangle and you loop. Those are called inverted. There is one unique one that, if you're really wanting to seek it out, it's out in California at Six Flags Magic Mountain. It's called X. And not only do you sit, you don't sit regularly. You're flipping through the ride. You drop down these amazing turns and you go upside down, but there's a second track that keeps rotating your seat at different positions. So sometimes you're flipped upside down, just tumbling over like a gymnast would. And there's only one of those, and it's called X. It's really bizarre.
I assume the Borg Assimilator slogan is resistance is futile.
That's correct.
Here's an email question from Carol Sanderson, the president of the American Coaster Enthusiasts. How can we design coasters for the increasing large population in the United States? Many rides, she says, do not allow very tall and very large people to ride. Sandor Kernax, is that an issue?
Well, it's always an issue, but I believe that you can look at this issue on many sides. Basically, amusement rides are designed that to accommodate practically everybody who goes to the park, which doesn't mean that everybody really should be able to ride a ride, because it's very difficult to design anything, or almost impossible, which would be as safe for a 80-pounder than, let's say, for a 450-pounder. That I would say that the rides are designed in a way to try to accommodate in the safest way the largest range of people, but there could be people with extreme physical dimensions who may not be able to ride certain rides.
Sandor Kernax, thanks very much for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sandor Kernax is president of Intamin Limited, a firm that designs rides for amusement parks. He was with us by phone from his office in Glen Burnie, Maryland. We're going to keep Tim Baldwin on the line if he can stay with us for a few more minutes. Come back after the break and take a couple more of your calls on roller coasters, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, the email address totn@npr.org. We'll also be talking about the Democratic Convention in Boston today, and find out why the price of crude oil hit record highs at the New York Mercantile Exchange. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Tomorrow at this time, we're going to ask you to think back to the last time you composed an essay. If just that sentence led to flashbacks of SAT answer sheets or college all-nighters, well, here's your chance for an update. We want you to send us a mini-essay, about 30 seconds, read out loud, but with a clear thesis and arguments. The topic, what is your favorite word? A word we can say on the radio. Points for humor, creativity, and persuasiveness. Send your entries to totn@npr.org. Please put essay in the title, and don't forget to tell us how to pronounce your name. Grades will be handed out tomorrow on Talk of the Nation. Today we are talking about roller coasters. Our guest is Tim Baldwin of Amusement Today magazine, and he's with us from Dallas. Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Barry, and Barry's with us from Heidelberg, Germany.
Hi, guys. How are you tonight?
Very well. Thanks for the call, Barry.
Hey, I just wanted to give your listeners just a brief idea of what we have over here in Germany. I'm an American who lives over here in Germany. And we have a roller coaster here at a place called Holiday Park. It's called the Expedition G-Force, and it's a steel coaster. That's the best one I've ever been on. It goes an 82-degree angle down from its initial climb, and it's so steep that you can't even see the tracks below you when you're making that first drop. You feel like you're free-falling from an airplane.
Tim Baldwin, we think of roller coasters as an American experience. Have you been on that one?
I have, and actually it's one of the very top favorites of mine, Barry, so I'm envious that you are close to it. It's not easy for me to get to Germany, and I dearly love the Expedition G-Force. It's great. I was actually on a roller coaster tour in 2002. It was called the European Coaster Odyssey, and that was probably one of our biggest highlights of a trip through six countries in Europe. It's a great one. Be glad that you're close to it.
My wife and I went on it three times each, and we only had to stop because the park was closing, or we would have gone more.
Okay. Barry, good luck, and hold on to your stomach.
Thank you.
Here's an email question from James in Folly Beach, South Carolina. Do roller coasters make money, or are they loss leaders to get people into the parks to purchase yummy food and pricey trinkets?
Wow, isn't that a tricky question? I wouldn't say they lose money. I think they're an investment. People are paying their admission price for an experience, and that is part of the experience. It's like saying, does a movie lose money because it costs money to make? You know, it brings people in, and yeah, the concession stand always helps the movie theater and everything, but overall, you're getting what you're paying for. The admission price pays for the experience, and then you're just the happy little customer that likes to buy something to eat and buy a T-shirt of their favorite ride on the way out. So, of course, that is how parks kind of make their profit a little bit. And typically, I would say the gate admission takes care of the ride investment capital itself.
Yeah, there's no separate charge for the roller coaster.
Typically not. There are some places that have, you know, just pay per ride that you want to do. And those cases are rare and, you know, a kind of a different scenario, but it's still all the same thing. They typically also offer a pay-one-price wristband or something for the whole day. So they're just giving their customers options.
Okay, let's get Carolyn on the line. Carolyn is with us from Williamsburg, Virginia.
Hi. Love your show and always listen to it. I live in Williamsburg, Virginia, and, of course, here we have the famous Busch Gardens. They have about five roller coasters. Every summer, my grandson, who's now 10 years old, and I'm 73, comes up for a visit. And of course, going to Busch Gardens is the big, big, big thing. And he loves the roller coasters. And the two biggest ones are the Alpengeist and the Apollo's Chariot. And those are his favorites because they're the biggest and the highest and the fastest. So anyway, we do that each summer. This past summer, we had just done one of the big ones. And as we were getting off, a young couple came up behind us, and they had just done the same ride, and she said to me, you know, we were watching you, and we just both hope that my grandmother, when she is your age, will be willing to do that with our grandson or granddaughter.
Good for you. Carolyn, you've got more guts than I do right now.
Well, my grandson is sitting there totally fearless and just taking it all in with eyes open. I'm sitting there next to him, sort of hanging on, you know, enjoying it, yes, but a little differently than he does.
Okay, well,
anyway, it's great, and we do it every year, and we'll continue to do it every year, I'm sure.
Congratulations, Carolyn. Good luck this time around.
Well, thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And Tim Baldwin, thank you very much for your time today.
Sure thing. It's very much a pleasure to be with you, Neil.
Tim Baldwin writes for Amusement Today, where he's in charge of the Golden Tickets Awards, which are being handed out, he mentioned, next month. He joined us from Cake Mix Studios in Dallas, Texas.